Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is how your occupational therapist welcome to OT Conversation. In this episode, I'd like us to have a discussion about vital signs. And let's have a talk about some of the functional implications of these vital signs. When you're working in a hospital, particularly in an acute care setting, especially in the field of medicine, surgery, vital signs are the ones that you'll come across with all the time. And based on practice and experience, I know that there is a lot of interest in this. And it feels like almost every student and almost every occupational therapist working in, they wanted to understand what the vital signs are. And it's very easy. There are just parameters. Unfortunately, you have to remember them by heart. And the best thing really is for you to practice it, talk to people about it, find out ways on how you can remember these things. The other thing about vital signs is that there are some monitors out there that creates an alarm for you. So you know that if something is not right, then it will create an alarm. And I believe it will be on one of the previous episodes that I have. I think it's Understanding Vital Monitors. And just have a listen to that episode again, and it will help you understand a little bit more on the vital monitors. When it comes to vital signs and their functional implications, what these vital signs do is that they reflect essential body functions, and it can indicate whether there is a problem or not. Vital meaning life signs, vital signs, or vital, which is important. These are all important signs. So we have to understand their functional implication because it will help you in assessing the person's ability to perform daily activities. It can identify medical issues, and then it can determine if you need more intervention, particularly more on the medical side. Because if there are some problems with the vital sign, then something is going on medically, then medical intervention is the way forward. But if you understand the vital signs, and you can tailor your activities and treatment as an occupational therapist. The first vital sign that we want to understand is body temperature. That's temperature. Very easy. And the normal range for this is around 36.1 to 37.5 or 37.2 to 5. So anything beyond 37.5, there is an increase in temperature. How do you measure the temperature? Either through the mouth. You use a thermometer through the mouth, rectal. Mostly for kids. Hopefully as a grown-up, you won't have to do that anymore. Axillary, which would have been armpit. That's the traditional one where there is a mercury thermometer that is used using mercury. Or tympanic, or the ear. So there are very high-tech ones nowadays where you just press a button, put it in the ear, and then it measures it. And also the forehead. So these are all temperature. Functional implications for this. If there is an elevated temperature of around 38 and above, the question is, what is causing this? This is not normal. So a person might have infection. They probably have an inflammation, or they have heat exhaustion. These are a few of the possible causes of this. And when one has temperature, the impact is that a person will have an increased tiredness and fatigue. It'll dry them out. They would have dehydration. They can get dizzy. And there can be some cognitive decline in terms of attention, in terms of concentration, brain fogginess, particularly if the temperature has happened for a long time. The other thing, in severe cases, when it comes to temperature, there is a possible risk of seizure and a bad confusion. It can make a person delirious. And maybe there could be an organ failure as well. So that is high temperature. Low temperature, on the other hand, is called hypothermia. That is a temperature that is lesser than 35 degrees. And possible reasons could be a person can be obviously cold, there can be a metabolic disorder, or there is a shock as well. What do you mean by shock? It just meant that there's not a lot of blood flowing around the system. And with the flow of blood, it brings warmth to the body. So if the body is losing blood, for example, then there is a shock and then they'll start feeling cold. Watch all of these movies out there and some of the TV programs, and you will see that somebody's had an accident and then they'll start talking that they're feeling cold. And that is an indication that somebody is getting hypothermic and it can be a problem. So the functional implications and the impact of this means that there can be an impairment in the coordination of the muscle. If you are cold, the person would shiver, they would shake. And this is a natural tendency of the body to do. They shake because the more muscles are moving, the more it generates heat. So they can have impaired coordination. Their reflexes, motor reflexes, can be slow. Judgment can be impaired. And there can be a risk of cardiac arrest in the very severe cases. Okay, so temperature. How do you know? Just ask the person, are they feeling okay? Do you really need to do something about the temperature at the moment? Just check for the vital signs. Are they afebrile or not? Usually, it is very much associated with a person not feeling very well. And if they're not feeling very well, intervention would be, yeah, you can still do occupational therapy. You can still approach them on the cognitive side. You can still have supportive therapy and you can talk and tap onto their volition and interest and values. You can have some bed-based, chair-based activities in here. Even if a person has a temperature, unless they really want to rest, you can still have an input on that one. You can do passive ranges, maintain the joint range. You can do proprioceptive stimulation. Okay, there we go. Very simple and quite extensive at the same time, temperature. Now let's talk about the heart rate or the pulse. When it comes to pulse, the normal range is from 60 beats per minute to 100 beats per minute. And how do you assess this? There is, you can check it on the radial artery. So check the wrists and there is the pulse that you can feel on the artery. You can check it on the neck, which is the carotid side. You can check it on the arm, which would have been the brachial side. And then the apical, which would have been the chest. And you can check these heart rates in here. Okay, 60 beats per minute to 100 beats per minute. Yeah, remember that. Heart rate. Okay. Now, when it comes to problems with heart rate, you can have a faster heart rate that is more than 100 beats per minute. And that is a condition or a situation called tachycardia. Tachy being Latin for fast, cardia is heart. In English, tachycardia is just fast heart rate. Okay, so don't be scared about these terminologies, guys. This is very simple. It's just a matter of Latin and you just convert that into English. Heart rate that's fast is more than 100 beats per minute. What can cause this? Stress can cause this. Dehydration can cause this. And then infection, you can have anemia, you can have heart conditions. These are some of the possible reasons why somebody's heart rate would be quite fast. And where the impact then would be, if the heart is beating faster than usual, it will likely increase the workload of the heart and their exercise tolerance would be a little bit decreased. There can be shortness of breath, there can be dizziness, and there is likely going to be a potential heart strain. So that is a condition called tachycardia. Now, when there is an irregular pulse, this is called arrhythmia. And arrhythmia is without, rhythmia is rhythm. So there is impaired rhythm of the heart. And the possible causes, there could be an electrical imbalance. There can be a heart disease or a pacing problem of the heart. So an arrhythmia should not happen normally. And if somebody is on, what do you call this? Recreational drugs, for example. So yes, stimulant use. So arrhythmia can be that. Stimulant use would be overuse. The coffee itself, those are all stimulants. So that can cause some of irregular pulse rate or pulse rhythm. The impact on this, it will impair the cardiac output and it can cause dizziness. It can cause fainting. Person is likely to have a stroke. Yeah. So atrial fibrillation. So all of these things. So tachycardia, increased heart rate. That is a bit of a problem. It's a concern. So you have to make sure that the heart rate is down. What can be an occupational therapist intervention in here? You can have relaxation strategies. You can educate the person about what's happening so that they don't get scared, especially if they're in the hospital and all these monitors are beeping and it can scare a person. Can you do some hand activities, dexterity activities? Yes, you can. It shouldn't affect the heart rate. Can you do gross motor activity? Now that becomes a bit of a problem. So avoid gross motor activity because it will demand more pressure. And with the tachycardia and irregular heart rhythm, there's just really no telling as to when the problem is going to be. So it's better if an occupational therapist is there. Again, is there a room for OTs? Yes. Can you be there? Yes. All right. And the third is the respiratory rate. RR, they would call it. It's not RNR. RNR stands for recreation, rest and recreation, usually delegated to military personnel. But this is RR, respiratory rate. So when it comes to breathing, this is the amount of breaths a person exerts or a person does per minute. And the normal would usually be 12 to 20. And how do you measure this respiratory rate? You just observe. Just don't talk to the person. You have to be like a Sherlock Holmes in here. You have to be mindful if you want to observe the respiratory rate. Most of the time, it's the nurses that will do this. Healthcare support workers will do this. There will be monitors that will do this. So you don't have to do it manually by looking at the chest. But that's how it is normally measured. 12 to 20. Functional implications and some of the conditions relating to breathing problem. You have bradypnea, okay? And brady is slow, just like bradycardia, brady is slow, okay? And this is, when it's slow, it's less than 100, it's less than 12 breaths per minute. So anything lower than that would be bradypnea. Now, the causes can be if a person has a drug overdose, they're on sedation. Person with brain injury can have these problems. Those people who has metabolic disorders can have this. And people who are unconscious or sedated, really, these are the ones that they would have some bradypnea as a symptom and as a problem. And that's why people who has this, sometimes they get ventilators, they get mechanical assistance when it comes to breathing. And what would be the impact when somebody's breathing is slow? There can be a carbon dioxide buildup in the body. That's why this condition called apnea, when you don't breathe at night, when a person does not breathe at night, when they sleep. So there is not a lot of exchange of carbon dioxide. And so there is a buildup of carbon dioxide, which will make a person lethargic. It will give them confusion, and if it's severe, respiratory arrest. Breathing just stops. Okay? So that's why when you're working in a respiratory ward and respiratory unit, you can see that a lot of people who are acutely unwell because of the carbon dioxide buildup, there is a lot of they're quite lethargic, so they would just be sleeping most of the time, and they can be confused, and they'd want to rest for a while until there is a balance between, and there's a balance that people have taken away the carbon dioxide in the system. So that's bradypnea. The opposite of bradypnea, so remember the value is 12 to 20, yeah? So anything less than 12 is slow brady, and anything more than 20 is tachypnea, okay? And the cause would be when somebody is anxious, they hyperventilate. Fever can cause this, and a lung disease can cause this. When somebody has metabolic acidosis, these are some of the problems that a person can have. And when they are tachypneic, person will have shortness of breath. They can be lightheaded. And obviously, they would have difficulty speaking because they're like panting. And they will have difficulty performing activities. They're really breathless. Shortness of breath. Yeah. So tachypnea. Now, what can you do then when somebody is on tachypnea, tachypneic episode? If it's just stimulate them. Relax them, that's rather. Relax them, have a conversation, teach them about the square breathing techniques so that they have a control about their breathing. Mind you guys, breathing has two controls. It can either be autonomically controlled, where the you don't have to think about it, but a person can willfully control the breathing as well. So that's the person willing their breath. And so there you go. So that is tachypnea. The other one, tachypnea is fast, right? The other symptom is called dyspnea. D-Y-S-P-N-E-A. Dyspnea. And this is a Latin prefix for difficulty. So difficulty in breathing or shortness of breath. And possible cause, somebody might have an asthma, somebody could have a heart failure, somebody could have chronic lung disease. Just remember, this should not be normal. You speak to the person and they're breathless, then dyspnea, and then they're breathing fast, ooh, tachypnea. So these are the terms that you need to remember to use. And the impact of dyspnea is that it will limit their physical activity. It can lead to them panicking. And this may require some form of oxygen therapy. What can an occupational therapist do in a situation like this? Again, let's address cognition. Yeah, cognition can be addressed in any way. Either the person is in bed or on the chair. You can talk to them, reorientate them, have a conversation about things. You can teach them about some breathing techniques and strategy as well. You can give them some form of a cognitive behavioral approach and strategy so that they can control their breathing and they be on top of that. So cognitive behavioral, because sometimes the problem is their thinking, because if they panic, then that's the situation. Okay, so that's dyspnea. Again, can you have an OT intervention? Yes, you can. Always. You just have to be mindful of the limitations. Can you do washing and dressing? Probably that is not suitable, only because it's a bit insensitive, isn't it? Can you give a patient some showering activity? Jeez, active showering, probably not. But what about passive? Meant it's being done to them. Yeah, why not? And you might want to give them some form of a, like, lukewarm water rather than a cold water, because that will ease their breathing. Remember, a cold water is facilitatory, meaning the colder it is, the faster a person would breathe. And if you want to do some inhibitory strategies, give them a piece of temperature where it's a bit low, then that would be suitable. Okay, moving on to the fourth symptom or vital sign, BP. And this stands for blood pressure. So the blood pressure, the normal blood pressure is 120 over 80. When somebody has a 130 or more over 80, that's hypertension. Or anything less, which is 90 over 60, that is called hypotension. So hyper and hypo, it talks to the first numbers, the higher number, okay? So functional implications for those people who has high BP, what can cause a high blood pressure? Stress, poor diet can cause a high blood pressure overall. Obesity will make it difficult. So there would be a high blood pressure. Genetics is an important factor, and people have realized it nowadays that high blood pressure can be familial, and a kidney disease. So that can be some of the possible cause of a high blood pressure. And once there is a high blood pressure, what are the problems here? Okay. Problems is that there is an increased risk of stroke, particularly the stroke that is the hemorrhagic type of stroke. And then a person can have heart attack, and there can be a kidney failure as well. And if you have a high blood pressure, it can cause headaches, it can cause dizziness, and over time, it can cause some cognitive decline. Yeah, that's hypertension. And when it comes to low blood pressure, possible causes would be dehydration. You can have blood, possibly if somebody is losing blood, so that will cause low blood pressure. Heart failure is another one. And the impact of this is that person can have dizziness. They can have fainting. The fatigue is there's a person gets tired easily. And there's a risk of shock in severe cases, cardiogenic shock. Okay, so that's hypotension. And then another condition or situation is called orthostatic hypotension, when there is a sudden drop of blood pressure when the person stands up. And the possible cause, dehydration can cause this, nervous system disorders can have this problem, and a prolonged bed rest can really do this. So when a person is in bed all the time and you get them to stand up and then they feel dizzy, yeah, that's because you were such in a rush that you got the person out. So what you do is stimulate the person, talk to the person, do some gross motor activity while in bed. And this way, the body is tensing up. And once the body is tensed up, then it will develop this particular tone, and that tone will maintain the blood pressure. If a person is lying down, all of a sudden you get them to stand up very quickly, geez, that is just a sure way to stimulate an orthostatic hypotension, especially if the person has been in bed for quite some time. All right, impact of orthostatic hypotension would be dizziness, falls, risk of injury. So BP, if anything, is one that will have a very, you have to be mindful of this. With temperature, okay, patient is likely would just like to be in bed. Respiratory rate, again, you can't do much. The BP, on the other hand, the heart rate, yes, these are all very insidious. So it's very quiet. The heart rate, you don't know what's happening. And then the blood pressure, these are the ones that will make it exciting in a bad way when you're doing your session. Excitement can be positive or negative. Any stimulation is called excitement. So you're doing your sessions and all of a sudden the blood pressure drops. And you can prevent this by doing some preparatory work as well. So BP, remember that. And the heart rate, these are the ones that are quite insidious. Yeah. Am I using the right word, insidious? Okay. They creep up on you. Okay. The next vital sign, the fifth one, would be saturation, oxygen saturation, SpO2. Now, personally, I really don't know what SP stands for. I'll have to look this up. But O2, saturation per oxygen, don't know. Normal saturation level is from 95 to 100. That's normal. And when a person has lower, which is lower than 90, that is called hypoxia. Hypo is low, oxia, oxygen, yeah, is in the blood. So there is low oxygen in the blood. And how does this get measured? You can have the pulse oximeter, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, there are some devices that you put in the finger, saturation level, where you measure the saturation level. Yes, it is the pulse oximeter. That's what you would use. And again, just remember, anything that is less than 90%, that can be a problem. There is low oxygen in the system. So normal is from 95 to 100. Anything low is called hypoxia. And what can be the possible cause? Why is there not a lot of oxygen going into the blood? One, probably because there is a lung problem. And high altitude can happen here. But if you're in critical care or if you're in a regular setting, for example, then you won't have to have problems with high altitude. So you can rule that out. Respiratory failure. So the failure of the lungs and the system, respiratory system, to oxygenate and ventilate the person. So that is, these are some of the conditions. And so what are the impact of this? Person can be confused. There can be shortness of breath. Person might be tired. There could be cyanosis. Person gets blue. And there is a risk of organ failure if this is prolonged. Again, can occupational therapists come in? Yes, you can. Because you can stimulate and engage the person even though they're not moving. So looking is stimulation. Attending is stimulation. Conversation is a stimulation, is our activities. You talk about their interests, their values. You can stimulate the person. You can have an OT session even though there is a hypoxia, unless their level of consciousness is impaired. And if it just happened very quickly, then it is a form of emergency. Inform people, call in. Two, if you're in the hospital, and obviously 999 if you're outside. But when this happens, you won't have any access to the meters when you're outside. So it's likely if you're in the hospital, an arrest would be 2222. Okay, so you can do that. But if it is stable and people know and they're not alert, they're not awake, you can still do your therapy input. Okay, and the last, I believe, of the vital signs is the pain level. And this is subjective and it is often considered as a vital sign. Yeah, so you go there, there's intentional rounding and people are being asked, are they in pain? How do you measure pain? You give a scale of 0 to 10, 0 having no pain at all and 10 being the worst pain. And then you have to identify, is this pain acute, meaning is it something that's happening most frequently, or is it chronic? Chronic means that the pain has been happening for more than 3 months, and obviously there can be some functional limitations and mental health decline. Person in pain all the time will be miserable. If you do this for a long period of time, they can be very grumpy. So it becomes an affective concern. Occupational therapy can come in, supportive interventions. Yeah. And then if it is acute pain, then you need to identify what's causing the pain. You don't have to deal with that, but it is a medical condition. So you have to ask the nursing staff or the medical team to have a look, but you can identify and report these problems. So functional implications for pain is there is an acute pain and all of a sudden, it's just very painful. So there, it will affect the focus on movement. So a person may be guarded. They may not want to move and they may not want to do anything. They might not even want to get out of bed because they are in pain. Chronic pain can lead to a reduced physical activity. It can get the person depressed and there can be sleep disturbances and some form of social withdrawal. Can OT come in? Of course you can. There is always a room for occupational therapist because your treatment can either be, if it is on the acute phase and you can't do much, your treatment can be on the adjunctive phase of therapy, or if it's safe enough to do it, enabling activities will have some little implications, just tug, pull, reach, grasp, release, some dexterity activities, play board games, do some crafts. Normally, that should be okay, and that should not take away the, that should not affect the vital signs for a huge amount. And so there we go. And then functional implications or functional rehab or purposeful activities. This is where you have to be mindful of this, because sometimes a person just can't do washing and dressing. If there are some vital signs concerned, you can still see them. Okay. And it's really up to the therapist, and you just have to be there, be present, be consistent. Advocate for OT by doing. Okay, guys, I hope you understand these vital signs. What it does is that it helps on the health status of our patients, and it can detect early warning signs of problems and illness, and it can determine whether you can engage the person, or it can determine the type of OT intervention, whether you be on adjunctive phase or on enabling phase or purposeful activity phase. Definitely not community integration phase, yeah? So you can find out those phase that match it with, is it a bed-based rehab? Is it a supported sitting-based rehab? Is it a sit-to-stand rehab? Is it a walking phase rehab? Okay. And then you'll have to factor in, are you going to approach it on the cognitive side? Are you going to approach it on the motor side? Are you going to approach it on the emotional side? Wow, there's a lot, isn't it? Well, there we go. I hope you learned a lot of things from this episode. If you like it, give us a favor. I have to say this, okay? Give us a favor, subscribe, share, okay? But I'm happy enough for you to start talking about this amongst your friends. My intention is for you to remember the vital signs, really. And because once you do, it'll make you a better clinician. Okay, guys, just remember, anything you do matters and has an outcome. Until next time, bye.